Welcome, everyone. This is Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International. It is February 14th, 2013, Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's Day, everyone. And we'll be talking about athlete pressure and momentum change and lots of good topics today and answering your questions. One of the main calls, of course, is to answer your questions. So if you and your challenges and your goals. So that's great. Just wanted to welcome everyone. We've got get Brett on the call and Pam and 610 area code. What's that?
Hi, Dr. Joanne. It's Amy. I just got on the call.
Oh, hi, Amy. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Good. Happy Valentine's Day to you, too.
Thank you. Same to you.
Yeah. So that's great. So before we get started, does anyone have any success stories to share or questions or anything that you want to chime in, anything that's happening with your business or practice? Or?
Yeah, I have one, a couple things, actually. This is Brett. First thing, I spoke with Ken Revisa last week. And
you can talk to, a little bit louder. What
happened? Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay. I was doing a book with Ken Revisa last week, and talking about doing a mentorship for my ASP certification hours. And you know, he said one of the things that would make it more worth his while is helping him write Heads Up Baseball 2, his newest book coming out. So. My question is with that is if I do, if he likes, because I'm sending him some writing samples, if he likes how I write and I do help him write that book, how can I, A, protect some of my own ideas that I come up with, and B, set myself up in a way where I could get some recognition for it? Just want to hear your thoughts on that. And then the other thing is, looking at partnering with a gentleman that coaches baseball at Air Force and very similar to me, and just want your thoughts on joining up with someone for a practice if your skill set and background are extremely similar, strengths and weaknesses of that, as well as protecting ideas if the person does not actually want to go through with the idea of joining up. How do you protect the ideas that you guys have shared or created with amongst each other?
Okay, yeah, Brett, those are great questions. Yeah, with the first one, with the book, I think there's many ways that you could work with that, and it would be it's important to be really clear or find out what. They want you to do, what you don't want to do is get into a position where they say, yeah, help you write the book, but what that means is you basically doing millions of hours, basically writing the whole book, but you don't get any credit. Yeah, that can be very frustrating. And if there's you want to try to get something in writing, if you the ideal situation is if this is, who is it, did you say, that's the author or the
Ken Revisa.
Yeah, so if it's somebody that's well known, then you know, if you could get be a co-author, that would be the ideal situation with your name and their name on the front cover kind of thing. And the next best thing would be to be a contributing author where you get paid something. And I'm in that. I got to be in that situation. Human Kinetics is one of the best publishers. Or probably the best well-known publisher in the sports area.
Yeah.
And they came out a year and a half ago, they came out with a new book called they were going to do a book called Triathlon Science, and they contacted me, and they said that we'd like you to be a contributing author and write 3 chapters for the book, and we will pay you $1,000 for that.
Uh-huh.
So that's an ideal situation because I didn't have to do a huge amount of work, but I did get paid for it. And now books take a long time, of course, to if it's being published by a publisher. So that was maybe a year and a half ago they contacted me, and I wrote the chapters, and then I had to go through several phases of editing that I had. had to do. So it was,
yeah.
It's a certain, you know, one weekend. I just spent a whole day or a couple days editing and that kind of thing. And then, but now this March, it's finally, the book's finally going to come out, and I'm finally going to get my $1,000 check a year and a half later. So it's not get rich quick, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
But it'll be very prestigious to be, you know, a contributing author in a book published by Human Kinetics. And so that's an ideal situation if you can get paid a certain amount for a certain amount of work. So if you can specify the amount of work you're going to do, the best thing would be to, you know, if they don't want you to be a co-author, then, you know, to be a contributing author and say, okay, I'll write these chapters, you know, like 3 chapters or 5 chapters, whatever number of chapters you want to do, and then ask to be paid for that if you can, or if you can't be paid, then, you know, get your name in the book and on their website, that kind of thing.
Associated.
That would be a good way to build your credibility. But try to limit the amount of work that you do so you don't end up just totally overwhelmed with work and feel like you're being kind of used.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, does that kind of make sense?
Yep.
Yeah, this is great.
And then you mentioned getting something in writing. What would that look like? Or is it a document that's called a certain thing?
It's a,
just a basic
just,
agreement.
Yeah, agreement or a contract. It could be as simple as an email. Most people start with something, you know, friendly, like just a letter of understanding through an email. And if you could propose, maybe sometimes people are pretty open to different things. You could propose something to them and just put it in an email and then have them, email back that I agree to that kind of thing. What you don't want to happen is what they call project creep or, it's like plumber comes into the house and they're working on one pipe and pretty soon the whole sink needs doing and then the whole house is falling apart. And so you don't want to start with say 3 chapters and then you end up they say and I want you to do this and this and this also the whole book. So
because
there's so much editing. Oftentimes if it's a publisher or somebody else and there's just the writing is just the first phase, and then there's many levels of editing after that that are it can be time consuming and frustrating.
If
you can do a smaller part of the book and then get a credit, then that helps you to you can be an author there. And this is good for all of you on the call and all of our performing edge coaches. Information about books and contributing to other authors that. All the author's books that you, you wanted to, I think, just limit the amount of work that you do there so you get credit for the book and you can contribute valuable information. But the ideal situation is just get experience doing that and then write your own book, after that.
Right.
You can, that would be a good thing to put in the contract that ideally if you can have that material yourself to be able to use in another book, then it's kind of repurposing. So that would be really good. But if it's a publisher, it depends on who's publishing it. Oftentimes publishers want to own the rights to that material. But you can take that material still. Let's say you're doing 3 chapters. You could write it, and then you could change. Still take the basic material, but change it and update it, and add different titles and do different. Make it a different slant to it, and then take that same basic material and use it for other purposes, kind of thing.
Right.
But I would say, if you're contributing to someone else's book, to protect yourself too, don't give them. Don't give them the farm. All your ideas or all your, let's say you want to write a book yourself. Think of it as publisher is most of the time they want to own that material. So it's like you're kind of giving
right.
that part away, and you have to be really careful and not give too much away so that you can. Use that same material for your own stuff, but that would be really important to write in an email first, just to understand that letter of understanding with email, And then and then if they do give you a contract after that, read the contract very carefully, or if you have an attorney friend, have them read it too, so that you can understand it and make sure you're not giving too much away, kind of thing. So and just know the contracts are negotiable, even though it's there. You know, we think, oh, you got to just sign it as is. You can make changes, and if you don't like a certain part of it, just get change in there. Right, call them and discuss it first, and then agree. And then if they really want you as an author, then they'll agree to that. Just you write in your changes and make a copy, and then alter it. Yeah, and then with your second question with about partnerships, I would say, Brett, that in general, with a business sort of thing, it's okay to do, I would do like a joint ventures with people, like if I have a product and I want someone else to promote it, then they would promote my product, and they get a certain percentage, like an affiliate fee, and then same thing, vice versa. Those are usually good because it's a short term thing. You're just giving them a commission for promoting your product, but to actually go into business with someone, I think in general partnerships are really messy and most of the time don't work out. Occasionally they do, but there's I would recommend against going into business with someone else. If you want someone else's help with something, it's better to just pay them for their work, their services. Like if someone to work for you or on a contract basis, just pay them for the hours that they work, kind of thing. But I've seen so many businesses go. You leave yourself open to intellectual property rights problems. Lawsuits and frustration. When you're in a business with someone, it's basically like you're getting married. So you have to ask yourself, "Do I want to get married?"
Yeah.
And oftentimes you really like the person at first, and there's lots of gel and lots of energy there. And then after you start working together and you find out all of their quirks and all the it's really hard for two people to work together. It can get really ugly really fast. I've seen it happen so many times where you're not getting along so well, and then all of a sudden if you're sharing clients or you're sharing a list, a mailing list or other things, it can be really frustrating and draining. So I would recommend against going into business with someone else. It's much better to be on your own. And then if you like being around other people, that's fine. And you can rent an office with other people, or you could have little groups like this forums to have that sense of community and other things, but so you can still interact with other people. But I think in terms of your business, it's much better to be a solo entrepreneur kind of thing to protect yourself, and that way you have full freedom over you're the CEO, you're the boss, you get to call the shots, and if you don't like something, you can make the decision. You don't have to consult someone else. Just think about it this way: if you have to every decision you make or major decision, you have to consult with someone else about that. After a while, it gets to be really frustrating if they're not agreeing with you. So
exactly.
Those are my feelings about it anyway.
Yeah. Okay.
So, but if you like working with someone else, you could collaborate with them in different ways, share ideas, have a mastermind group, you could talk and refer clients back and forth, all of that kind of thing is much cleaner, much safer, and you'll get yourself involved in all the legal stuff that's can be involved with businesses.
Yeah.
Anyway,
okay.
That's my advice anyway, because I've seen lots of partnerships go bad.
Okay.
And you've got so much to each of you in this program. We have so much to offer that you want to be able to, offer those things without, draining yourself. And, you can move forward much faster, I think, with, by yourself. And then just getting, consultation from, like, our group here and from, you know, people that you respect without having to be in business with them. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyway, okay. is that helpful?
Yeah, it is. It's some good perspective, I thought. I would see, because I know with consulting practices, typically they're run alone, but sometimes you do see a joint. So just kind of want to do your take on it. Well, thanks.
Yeah. And I think you can, there's ways that you can work with people without being in a legal business with them, just do a collaboration kind of thing. But if you have a website, for instance, and a business name, I think it's much better to have it in your own name, your own business. You know, if you get in a disagreement or split ways, then all of a sudden it's, well, who owns the domain name, who owns the bank account, who owns the list, all that stuff works so hard for you, you might end up losing all that.
Right.
I've seen it happen so many times with people that I thought were really solid. Oh, yeah, these two people work really well together. And all of a sudden I find out, oh, where's the website? It's gone. They split up. And
yeah.
They split up. Yeah, it's amazing. So, great.
Okay.
So I was just, I think a little bit about books and partnerships. Those are really good questions. Thanks, Brett, for asking that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, I think Ryan Royer came on too. Did you? Are you there? I just want to say hi. If Ryan's there, maybe he's. I see his name anyway here, and he might be on mute or something. But anyway, just welcome. Yeah. And Amy, did you have any questions or comments? He might be on mute as well. I see you're on the line. Okay. Well, let's
hello. Go. Sorry, I was on mute.
Okay, good. Did you want to have anything to share or any updates?
I had an interesting meeting yesterday. It was more like a workshop with an organization called Philly Mama, and it's an organization that was started by a female attorney in Philadelphia that has children, and it's only for women attorneys that have children. They're kind of a support system for each other. And so I came and I spoke to them at one of the law firms yesterday, and it was interesting to just hear about how difficult it is for them to transition back and forth between the workplace and their home life and trying to do things for themselves, and they're all just really stressed out. So it was fun to do that. So that was yesterday, and then I have another workshop at the ballet next week, and I'm going to be coaching one of the principal dancers. She just emailed me and said that she's having performance anxiety and she's a real perfectionist. So I'm going to be working with her privately next week before the workshop. So that's kind of interesting.
I was
looking through the book, your book today, about the performance anxiety and trying to come up with some good ideas for that coaching session.
Yeah, that's great. Are you? Is it a paid session?
No.
Okay.
I'm doing a complimentary. I have a deal with them where I'm going to get paid to work with their school, but I'm going to be doing about 4 workshops a year for the professional dancers, and they're in such terrible financial state right now that I told him that I would come up with a number for what it was going to be, you know, for the workshops and a little bit of coaching, and I would use that this year as a donation to the ballet, and then I'll get paid to work with the school.
Oh,
but
great.
they're really struggling financially right now.
Yeah, so working with the school, is that the school you mentioned before?
Well, they have a school at their training facility for kids 8 to 18.
Oh, okay.
And that's a program that gets funded a different way. So I'm going to work with them this summer, starting their program with their camp.
Is that for dancing too?
Yeah, dancers.
Great.
But it's really interesting. I find it a great challenge, in a good way, to work with such elite athletes that are, especially the principal dancers. It's really cool to have the opportunity to work with her. So I haven't done it yet. It'll be next Wednesday that I'm going to do the coaching session with her in person before the workshop.
Good. Yeah, that'll be...
Do you have any recommendations about perfectionism?
Yeah. I think it's kind of like think of it like a pendulum swinging back and forth. You have to, you know, with balance, the pendulum swings toward the right and then it swings toward the left and then you have to find that right spot in the middle. And if everything has to be perfect in order to be a success, then you're, most of the time, people are disappointed. And on the other hand, if you don't have enough, you know, if you have lower standards, then then you're not, you know, doing well enough to get the praise, get the rewards and honors that you want and need. So it's kind of that pendulum has to kind of swing in between somewhere. And I think one way to do that is to find out what, you know, have kind of smaller goals and have a process goals as opposed to just outcome goals. So, for instance, you know, with running, it would be, you know, a process goal might be, well, instead of just always thinking about I want to run a faster time, it would be, you know, working on my form and my
mm-hmm.
breathing and mental focus and concentration. And so same thing for dancers. You know, they need all those things, the concentration and focus and not to have to be perfect. Can you give an example of her perfectionism?
She just sent me an email, and she said, the staff knows of my performance stress, so they'll be happy to let me come work with you. I mostly want to find a way to not let my perfectionism get the best of me and my constant need for approval of others and myself.
Yeah. So that's a great, that tells you a lot in that email.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess that one thing you could work with, just ask her about that question first. You know, tell me about, that constant need for approval, and she'll probably tell you a whole lot, probably fill up the whole session just talking about that one answer.
About what she feels about, you know, the approval from others.
Yeah, I find out more about what she feels about that, and different aspects, different situations, examples, and then try to work with those and say, okay, well, what if we had a smaller goal or kind of broke that down into pieces, you know, and let's say, you know, just thinking of an example, you know, in one, you know, dance, she has, you know, is expected to do, you know, let's say, for instance, 10 different moves and, or 10 different, you know, kind of positions, and she only does, you know, 8 of them right or messed up on one of them or two. You know, is that, find out what would be a good amount, is there a way that she could have a, you know, something that's a performance that's reasonable but not perfect? You know, what would that look like? You know, after that, maybe, you know, what reasonable,
okay.
Good, you know, let's say in school, you know, you get A's and B's and C's. Let's say if you got a performance that was a B, what would that look like? And how would that be okay? How could we, you know, kind of make it, because we want to make it fun, right, and enjoyable. That's the challenge for every athlete and for every is making your, because that's to be able to exist, keep going with your sport, you got to have some satisfaction there and fun. And so ask her, you know, how can we make this satisfying for you? And so you can give yourself, you know, it's hard to control what kind of approval other people get, because you can't really That's sort of one of those external factors that you can't do anything about. But what you can do something about to separate those two out, what you can work on is the, you know, giving approval to herself. So if you can ask, what can you give your, how can you, one thing you could do is rather than not the whole, rather than working on the whole dance or the whole workout, say a different, break it down into different parts and say, okay, well, part number one, the first, 10 seconds or the first 30 seconds, how did I do in that part? And kind of rate yourself there and say, is there a way, what could I give myself approval for in this first 30 seconds of the dance? You know, that's a
okay.
good question to ask. And the key is give myself approval as opposed to looking for someone else. Because I know a lot of times, yeah, the problem is with dancers and as well as athletes, you know, being coached, that their coaches are so harsh and, yeah, the coaches are perfectionists, so it turns the athlete into a perfectionist, right? And so they're thinking, you know, their mind is going, you know, just only in this direction of, I only can give myself approval if the coach approves of it, is what they're thinking. But actually, you know, when you're by yourself and when you're just you and her talking, you can say, well, let's open up another opportunity. What if you could give yourself approval and a stamp of, you know, being okay if you just on your own? What could you give yourself a gold star for?
Okay.
And in fact, you know, it sounds silly, but I think those are just a really good thing to have. Either you can buy them or have her go out and buy, you know, go to a Staples or someplace and just buy a package of gold stars. You know, those little gold stars that you put on kids in sixth grade. You get a gold star for, you know, doing your homework well. You know, have a little logbook and, you could design it be kind of different for dancing than for other sports, you know, for got to write down, ask her, okay, what kinds of things are you, do you get approval from your coach and from yourself, and what are your goals and what are your specifics for, you know, and she could maybe write down all the different moves and spins and jumps and all the different things she has to do, and let's focus on just doing, you know, say half of it right, or, you know, or three quarters of this stuff well, be able to make a standard that's, talk about the fact that doing everything 100% perfect all the time is not practical. It's not human. It's like asking yourself to be a superstar, right? And so you set yourself up to be, yeah, miserable. But if you can say, well, what if, let's start with, say, 50% right, doing half the moves right or half the, you can kind of brainstorm with her a different kind of figure a way to kind of rate herself. But there's two ways to rate it. One, and this applies to every sport, is, doing the moves right in the dance, the physical part, but then we're all about the mental part, right? So ask, you know, let's say, can you rate yourself, how did you perform mentally? And say, you know, a rating scale from 1 to 10 how much confidence did I have today? You know, rate yourself 1 to 10 on that. Rate yourself 1 to 10 on how positive was I in this workout. Rate yourself 1 to 10 on that. And how focused was I? And give yourself a score on that. And I don't know if I've given you my – I've got an article on logbook and kind of how to rate yourself mentally. Have I shared that? I'm not sure if I have. With the group, here I'm putting a note here to put that in the members area. I have it's not in the Your Performing Edge book. It's a separate article I've written on how to keep a logbook and how to rate yourself mentally as well as physically. And then if she could, I'll email that all to you too. And if you can write that down, you have her use something like that and rate what she's doing mentally as well as physically, then she could give herself, I think, a better, and all athletes this works well with, athletes can give themselves approval for, being in the right mental state, because once you're in that mental state, then the physical stuff comes more easily. And also being more relaxed, that's really an important thing for her since she's really stressed, is creating that, being relaxed and okay with what she's doing, able to kind of be really fluid. Because once your mind is relaxed, then your muscles relax more too. Does that kind of make sense?
Mm-hmm. So that's something I could print out and use, the log?
Yeah, logbook. It's an article I've written on how to what to rate yourself on. I haven't got the a printout. I'm working on that of how to something with a it could be an actual like Excel spreadsheet. I think I have. I got to look and see if I've got that printed out. It could be on a spreadsheet. Excel spreadsheet for this PC users use Excel spreadsheets for different things. But if you have an Apple, does Excel spreadsheets work there too? You guys that are
mm-hmm.
Apple users?
Yep.
Anyone? Yeah. Is there Excel spreadsheets there too? Yeah. Okay. So anyway, I'll send you the logbook where it's an article on how to do a logbook, and I've got that. And then you can until I get the spreadsheet, I'll check on that part because I don't know if I have that ready yet. But in the meantime, she could just basically what you do is take a piece of paper, and just draw it out, just put. The days of the week on the left-hand side, all the way down. So, on the left, you'd write Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And then across the top, you'd write all the different categories of things that you want to rate. So, create columns for your physical training, and then a column for mental training, and one for lifestyle. Like eating habits, sleep, and that sort of thing. And there's a column for recovery, how much you recover at, or what you're doing to help yourself recover. Like you said, that ballet dancers are really all constantly injured, right? So they're always having to
mm-hmm.
do icing and stretching, and there's a lot of that goes on. It's the non-sexy part that's not as exciting. But that's all really important to be able to work on the recovery part and to rate different parts of your body. If it's a little bit of an ache or pain, give yourself a 1. If it's constant nagging pain that's been there for 3 days, give yourself a 3. And so you can rate how your body's doing, and then rate your body recovery and all. So there's an area for that, and rating different things that people don't really think about. And I really believe what you rate, what we keep track of is what we improve upon, right? And if you have something like that, a logbook, then that way she could, your client, she could. That's a way to be able to reward herself at the end of each workout, the end of the week, and athletes can reward themselves and give yourself a gold star for doing, let's say, getting doing your recovery stuff every day of the week. That could be a gold star, being focused, and maybe just something about, just being able to give yourself a good, just say good job. We're always looking for the coach to say good job, right? And sometimes, some coaches rarely say that at all. I've had clients that, they never get any feedback, good feedback from the coach. All I get is, you know, negative stuff if they do something wrong. And so you've got to be able to find a way to give yourself that approval, even if the coach isn't saying good job, be able to say that to yourself. That was a good jump. That was a good spin. That was a good move right there. And, you know, find some way to, you know, maybe just put her hand on her thigh or you know, smile or some way to give yourself that approval, even in the middle of a workout or practice. Does that kind of make sense? Or is that
mm-hmm.
helpful?
Yeah, very helpful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm just kind of brainstorming here because you got such great questions for sure. Yeah, thanks, Amy.
Those are great ideas. Thank you, Dr. Joanne.
Yeah, thank you, Amy, for asking. And congratulations on getting your client. It was dancing, and it's really interesting. I was saying you can write your article on mental training for ballet, keeping you on your toes.
Yeah.
Great title. Your next book. You never
right, know. That's a good idea.
Yeah. Or blog post. You could put that as a blog post on your website. So,
well, they liked the yesterday when I was with the lawyers, they said they were really drawn to the, I called it peak performance training, and they liked the sound of that.
Yeah, I like that title. Yeah. Peak performance training as opposed to, thinking sports psychology. Am I feel like there might be something wrong with me?
Yeah.
It's good because some people, you know, what we're doing is mental training, but some people don't like the word mental, because they think it has a little bit of stigma attached for some people. I think most people now are really like that term a lot, but peak performance training is great because everyone can relate to that. So that's good. Yeah. So great. Thanks, Amy, for asking your question. And let's see. I wanted to get into the pressure kind of on athletes' information here. And Ryan, are you there too? I was just going to say hi to Ryan if he was there, not muted. But anyway, if you're there, you can say hi. let's talk a little bit about the pressure on athletes and on what happened at the Super Bowl. I think it's a good example of momentum change. First, we can talk about kind of what causes performance anxiety, and this ties into Amy, your question about the anxiety there that you were asking about with your athletes. I think that worry, and anxiety, it often happens when. Oh, let me just put this for this little section here. I'll put this on mute here so we can get a clean recording. I think it's a little bit of background noise. So worry occurs when there's a difference between what is hoped for or expected and what is actually happening. So let's say you go to a race and you're primed to run your fastest 10K time ever, and then all of a sudden there's pouring rain and there's 25-mile-an-hour headwinds. And let's say your knee starts aching during the warm-up and your team is counting on you to run a fast time and get those critical points you need. And, with those – that kind of situation, chances are you're not going to be running a personal record, and you're going to you need to change your goals, have a plan B, a plan C, but the external pressure is still there, and so you need to be able to read your mental and physical cues and interpret them correctly. So notice if you want to notice if your arousal level is too high. Then you can intervene early, but you want to be able to do something, take in some deep breaths, give yourself some positive, power words before the stress becomes too unmanageable. And you can learn to take those, just as taking five simple deep breaths makes a huge difference with performance anxiety. Being able to relax enough to solve the, think clearly and solve the problems that are coming up and readjust appropriately to the situation. You can say, okay, I'm not going to be running a personal best in pouring rain and 25-mile-an-hour headwinds. But what I can do is just run the best I can, realize that everybody else is running in these same conditions, and that all I can do is do the best I can in this situation. I wanted to give you an example of a, this is a cute, just an adorable story that one of my, I'm working with one coach privately, you know, on my one-to-one program, and he was talking about his, he's both a coach and a father for his girl, a 7-year-old daughter up in Canada, and their, you know, hockey, of course, is the best. Is really where it's at with, you know, everybody's into hockey in Canada, and they start them very young. So he has this team of 7-year-old girls out there playing hockey, competitive hockey. If you can imagine, you know, this, you know, picture of these 7-year-old girls all with their, you know, helmets on and their whole gear and their hockey sticks out there playing hockey. And his daughter asks, a 7-year-old daughter asks him, Daddy, can I be goaltender? I really want to be goaltender, you know, the goalie. And he says, well, honey, being a goalie is really a rough job, and you gotta, it's very stressful, and I don't know if you want to do that. She says, oh, Daddy, I really want to be goaltender. Please let me be goaltender. So he said, okay. And this is a great story about pressure. She says, so she gets out there, and she's the goaltender. And the other team is much better, it turns out, than they are. And within, like, 30 seconds, the other team, they're just getting, she's getting clobbered. The other team gets a goal, 30 seconds. Another, within 2 minutes, they've got, like, 3 goals. Within about 5 minutes, they've got 5 goals. Everything is going past her, right into the net, right into the goal. And she's crying. Obviously, total pressure and feeling so frustrated. And she comes back and says, Daddy, I don't want to be goaltender anymore. And he says, honey, you're the only one out here right now. We can't change. There's nobody else that can do this job right now. We need to have you be goaltender. And she said, oh, I can't do this. But he said, honey, I promise you, this is going to make you stronger. You just stay out here. It's going to be over soon, and you're going to be okay. And she... somehow she got a little, she was so frustrated, and by the end of the game, the other team got 18 goals, 18 points, which is a huge amount for hockey. And he said that it was breaking his heart to watch this and watch the, you know, the ultimate pressure on an athlete, a goalie out there. Here she is, you know, nothing. She's like feeling helpless. And he kept telling her, honey, it's okay. You'll learn so much from this, and I promise you this is going to make you stronger. This is going to make you a much better athlete. She goes, really, Daddy? And he said, yes. So just the important thing is just hang in there till the end. And she did. She was able to, even though she fought through the tears, and she was able to hang on being a goalie all the way to the end. And afterwards, they went and had a talk, and she believed her father, who was also her physical coach and her mental coach, her performing edge coach. And she said that, you know, the next week she went and she said, Daddy, I want to play a different position now. went out and was able to, you know, just go ahead, adjust and be, you know, one of the other players. And she just let it go and realized that, yeah, there was an important lesson there. Just hang in there and do the best you can. And even if you're feeling tremendous pressure, you can get through it. And those situations do make you stronger. So that was kind of a story that I think we can all learn from, all those situations where you're stuck in a situation where you can't, you feel like you don't have the skills to get out of it. And sometimes if you just hang in there, you're gonna learn from it. So, and that's a situation where if you're the coach, you know, you need to know, to figure out what you can say to a person, figure out how to turn it into something positive. It's those situations where we lose or where we feel like we've fail, those are the kind of situations where you dig down deep and you find out things about yourself that you could never learn otherwise. So it's important to realize that losing and learning and pressure are really valuable situations to learn from. And those are the ones where we usually, find out where our skills are. And that's where we do the most thinking afterwards. So I wanted to ask a second question is, why do athletes choke and when it counts the most? And why do we mess up when it counts the most? I think one factor that leads to choking and to worry and anxiety is being overly concerned about the outcome of your performance. And so, not knowing if you're not knowing what the outcome is, or you're obsessing about all the what ifs, it can really threaten your sense of well-being. And when you concern yourself too much, or an athlete concerns themselves with the consequences of an outcome, then that worry, just gets bigger and bigger, and really can turn into that stifling fear. You might be thinking, well, what if I don't perform well in this one situation? In this one game, I'll lose critical points, I'll let my team down, I won't get asked back to this event, I won't get media exposure, I'll lose my sponsorship. We're thinking that it just kind of spirals, that thinking, those negative thoughts can really affect your mental outlook and the way your body performs. And I think that, on the other hand, the question is how do, athletes handle extreme pressure. And what I've found in my experience is that the ones that consistently perform well have found ways to channel that pressure and channel their negative emotions. You can take charge of your thoughts and turn that nervous energy into a powerful source of inner strength and confidence. And when the tools, with these tools that we'll be talking about today, and maybe we'll go into this more next week too. I think, in the performing edge tools, the positive images and power words, present focus and handling pressure, you can quickly shift from that being worried, having that worried mind to a more confident focus within your sport as well as other aspects of your life. And it's interesting, in my experience, working with top athletes, it seems that, I found that all performers experience those high levels of anxiety before a race, before a game, or before dancing too, Amy, as you're talking about dancing, many even have extremely elevated anxiety levels, and even with those high levels of nervousness, there's many athletes perform exceptionally well and very close to their potential, and they're able to, the determining factor is not how much anxiety is there, but how the athlete perceives his or her own personal signals of anxiety. It's like how you look at it and how they're channeled. So how much anxiety you have is not that important. If you've got butterflies in your stomach, that's okay. But if you can say to yourself, okay, this is a sign that I am psyched, I'm ready to go, I can handle this nervousness, I can handle the situation, and be able to give yourself those, that self-talk around being nervous, let nervousness be your ally rather than your enemy, then you're going to do a lot better. So, I just wanted to use the also, I don't know if we've got a couple of new people that are, I think they might have their phones on mute, but there's Dana, I just wanted to change the subject for just a second. Dana is up in Canada, in Toronto area, and she's a downhill skier, and she's joining us too from Canada. And then there's also Eve from Luxembourg and Belgium. He's joining us from Europe. So I just wanted to say, I think they may be on mute right now. I can't talk by phone, but I wanted to say hi and welcome to those people too. So anyway, getting back to the topic here, I just wanted to give talk a little bit about unexpected mishaps and what happened at the Super Bowl game that was so dramatic. Most of us in the U.S. watched it. If you're in Europe or other places in the world, it might not have been as prominent. But what happened in the middle of the game was, the 49ers were way down. San Francisco 49ers were 6 points, and the Baltimore Ravens were up to 28 points. I mean, this huge spread, and it was just looking really bad for the 49ers. They had they were getting trounced, and then there was halftime show, and then afterward, the Baltimore Ravens got another touchdown, and they were just it was just looking really bad. Baltimore Ravens ran the ball all the way across the field, set almost a record or tied the all-time record for points run in one play, and so then the lights went out for 30 minutes. They had technical problems, and the lights went out completely. And, it was interesting how afterwards the 49ers came back and had this huge surge. I just wanted to ask all of you, during that time when the lights went out and you had to all of a sudden, so you have this situation where the Baltimore Ravens had this momentum. They had this surge. They were way ahead, and they're thinking, they're probably thinking, oh, man, we had this great momentum, and now all of a sudden, the lights go out, and it's just, this big monster comes in the way. How am I going to handle this? Are we going to be able to keep our momentum going? And on the other hand, the 49ers were thinking just the opposite. Oh, this is our chance. Thank goodness, we can regroup, we can recharge, re-energize here and really go for it and go for the and they just, came back and were able to get just march down the field, get 17 points in 4 minutes, which is just unprecedented. So you wonder what I wanted to talk to you a little bit about momentum change and what was the difference, say, an attitude and energy between the 49ers and the Baltimore Ravens, and in general, what kind of lessons can we learn from this? If you were out there coaching, I'm going to open up the lines here for a second and just ask you, if you were out there coaching those teams, either one, the 49ers or the Baltimore Ravens, the team that was on the winning streak, the Ravens, or the 49ers that were way losing but had a chance to come back, what would you say to them or what would you have them do during that 30 minutes when they're just, the lights went out, you've got this unexpected outside, mishap going on, and you've got a chance to, things could really change. So let me just ask you here and ask you, does anyone have give me some thoughts on that, your comments? What would you have done if you were out there coaching those teams? You guys can jump in.
If you're sure.
I don't know if anyone has ideas about that. Ryan or Amy or Brett? Brett, you thought.
Yeah, I would have them start visualizing if you're the losing team, start visualizing you guys making plays and seeing the scoreboard turn the other way. And if you're the winning team, start visualizing holding them and, what it's going to feel like at the end of the game when you are victorious. And then, I guess they assume that since it's the Super Bowl, there's no doubt in anyone's mind the game's going to continue playing. But a great thing that my college coach has taught us, especially dealing with rain delays and that kind of thing, is just keep reminding the players that you're playing. There's no doubt in your mind that the game is going to get canceled until it actually is canceled. So it just kind of keeps you in the present.
Right, exactly. That's good. Yeah. Good comments, Brett. I think that's absolutely true. You're right on. Anyone else?
Hi, it's Amy. I would do some relaxation breathing. And I would also do some visualization. If I was the losing team, I would start visualizing making the plays that they want to play and, you know, throwing long passes and catching them and doing all the things that they want to do and tried to do but didn't work well. If I was the winning team, then I would be visualizing what they've done well so far and also coming up with some positive affirmations for them and just keep it really positive and relaxed. And
yeah, that's good. Yeah, I think that's great. That's true. And that's the kind of situation where our MP3s, you know, the visualization comes in really handy. And what if, you know, during that time, those players out there had access to your MP3, your audio visualization of, being able to, you could have, make one for relaxation. It, you know, that's the situation where if an athlete had a whole library of different MP3s, you could make them one each week they're paying you for and in each of your sessions, you know, one for relaxation, one for getting pumped up, one for, that way they have a choice, you know, one for, the positive images and one for self-statement, so that in that kind of situation, they've got your MP3, they've got an iPod, and they have all of your audios, all of your mental training audios on playlists. And just like, instead of just playing music like most people do, they could choose from your playlist of do I want to hear Amy talking about relaxation, or do I want to hear Brett talking about getting pumped up or getting, Ryan telling me how to be positive, or Eve's way over in Luxembourg talking about, Eve was telling me that in Luxembourg, he has a chance. There was just something in the news yesterday that, if any of you have watched the Tour de France in the past, a couple years ago, there's the Schleck brothers, Andy Schleck and Frank Schleck, they're brothers. They actually both got on the podium, second and third in the Tour de France, and they're from Luxembourg. And in the newspaper yesterday was an article that Andy Schleck was having problems with his cycling, and but they're clearly not physical problems, they're mental problems. Our new Performing Edge coach, hi Eve, if you're listening to this, he's over in Luxembourg, and wants to get a chance to see if he could try to contact him and work with him. And so I was going to, provide some ideas about that. But if you have a playlist like this with like the 49ers and in the Super Bowl, then the athlete could choose from your library of MP3s you've made for them. If they're too relaxed, then they might want to hear the MP3 to get them pumped up. If they're too excited and nervous, they might want to hear something to help them relax. So each athlete is so different, and they could each choose something that works for them. So those are great ideas there. I think that's why there's such a huge need for what we do, and a huge need for us to be able to work with these athletes in situations like that. If you can help them mentally prepare ahead of time, you see the problem that most athletes have, I think, is they only visualize one scenario or one, the perfect race, the perfect game, and everything going really well. But when they've got an unexpected mishap like this, the lights going out, nobody's. We're unprepared for that. Nobody knows what to do. So if you can, another thing they could do is just visualize, if you're prepared ahead of time for these unexpected mishaps and think, oh, geez, what if this happens? What if this happens? Here's what I'm going to do. If A, then I'm going to do B. So that they know ahead of time that they've got a plan for anything. Or, of course, you can't visualize all the different or prepare for everything that's going to happen. But what you can do is say to yourself, I perform well under any conditions. You know, I can handle anything that's happening. So, you know, that kind of statement sort of encompasses everything. So, yeah, I think it's a really valuable lesson that we learned from the game there, that, you know, the 49ers were able to take that, momentum and just turn it around into the superhuman effort to just charge down the field and just totally change the momentum there. They were able to work with what happened, a mishap like that, and really work with it. But, of course, they came up to brought the score from 6 all the way to 31. So it was 31 to 34 points. They were so close to winning, and yet they didn't quite make it till the end. And the Baltimore Ravens came back and ended up winning the game. But and maybe next time we can talk a little bit more about losing and learning and how to reframe things when you when things aren't going your way. You might have played the best game in your life, but still your team lost, and how to reframe that would be great. So that's great. And do you guys have other questions about that? Well, let me ask you, if you were the player out there, if you were or if you were the coach, there were the Harbaugh brothers who know each other very well. They were both coaches. Jim Harbaugh, was the coach for 49ers, and John Harbaugh, the coach for the Baltimore Ravens, a really unique situation where they grew up together. They were in the same room, the father drew a line down the middle of the bedroom at nighttime because they were so competitive when they were little kids. And, if you were the coach for those teams, what would you tell them during that time? Staying loose, is there anything that you would advise the coach to do? You guys can jump in if you want. I think what I would do is just tell the coaches. Oftentimes, the players react just like the coach reacts, and if the players see that the coach is really nervous and upset, then they're going to get upset. So I think if you're working with a coach in a situation like that, if you can advise the coach to be do his deep breathing. Do everything that you want the athletes to do, to be strong, be relaxed, be focused, and stay positive, and not show in your face, even if you have doubts, to not show that in your face. Then the players are going to pick up on what you're feeling, what you're showing, and you can demonstrate that to the, and you can translate that good energy to your team. So, I think that's a really important lesson there. I wanted to also, because Eve's had this question, he's not able to talk on the call, but everyone can listen to this recording. He had this question in Luxembourg, come back to that, about Andy Schleck, who was Tour de France second place finisher a couple years ago. He's, it's in the news that he's having problems, but they're clearly mental rather than physical problems, and how to work with him. Of course, we don't know what the exact problems are right now, but I would just say, Eve, if you can, different ways that you could contact, and this goes for, how to contact any athlete that's, well-known, famous athlete. I would say, to possibly be able to work with them, you'd want to, if you can contact their, oftentimes they have a website, you can go to their website and then look under media, because usually they'll give more contact information under the media section or press section of a website. So if you can go there, it will often give a phone number or email of where to contact the either them or the agent, depending on how famous the athlete is and how well funded they are. Sometimes they actually handle their own PR and all, and you'll get them in person, or if not, then you know, you'll get their agent. And oftentimes, you know, it might be an agent that's, you know, a really big, huge agent. Sometimes it's a brother or a family member that's actually the agent, so they're fairly close, or a wife or husband, so they're actually close to the person. And so you can then contact that person, and you might say that you would like to be able to help. And in that case, if it's a really well-known athlete, then it's worth it to do a few sessions by complimentary, so that you can get a really powerful testimonial from them. And yeah, Andy Schleck is really well-known, of course, famous in the cycling world, so that would be really valuable for you. So you can you know, say that you'd like to be able to make him a custom MP3 file for helping him with peak performance and getting back to his best cycling. And you know, that you could talk about coaching too, along with that, but oftentimes coaching athletes don't really know what all that involves. And but the MP3 is something that's unique, that they feel like that's a tool that they could use right away. So often athletes would be more open to that initially, and then you could work into your coaching part, just saying that you could make them a peak performance visualization, you know, MP3 audio that they can listen to on their iPod that's customized exactly for their needs. And you would just need, say you just need like a you know, 10 minutes to half hour with them on the phone to talk about the, you know, what a peak performance or a time when they were at their absolute best, and that you can create MP3 to help them through that, help them recapture those feelings of confidence, power, and inner strength. That's what I would do to try. That's one approach. And another approach is you could approach them as a media person and say that you'd like to interview them. You'd like to interview Andy for your website, for your book. You can start a new publication, who knows, and call it that. For your radio show, say that you're having an internet radio show, and that you'd like to have just 5 or 10 minutes, you know, very short interview. You want to make it short so that they, you know, have all their time, and do the media interview. About what you could do with an MP3 for them. So that's another good idea, too. So, yeah. Anyway, I just, those are some ideas for how to for you, Eve, in Luxembourg, and also how to, for everyone, how to contact and work with the top athletes. Yeah, just wanted to, again, welcome Dana in Canada and Toronto to our call too. Sing in, I think, and if you have questions, feel free to email me. So you guys, let's see, our next call will be on February the 28th, last day of February. We'll go continue with this, you know, the second part of this thing and learn when athletes have a difficult, disappointing experience, how to deal with that. And if you have other topics that you'd like me to talk about, let me know. I'm happy to discuss any topics that you want and questions. These are great questions you had today, Brad and Amy and Ryan. Thanks so much for being on the call here.
Well, thank
yeah.
you.
Thanks, sure, Dr.
Yeah.
Joanne.
Yeah, if there's, would you like to share just the best gem that you got or best idea that you got from today's call? Maybe something that you can take home with you?
Well, it was appropriate for me because my whole theme was performance anxiety. So I got a lot out of the call from ideas on how to coach this dancer. So that was very helpful for me.
Good. Glad, Amy. Thanks.
I like the idea of the MP3 available for athletes during those situations, as well as affirmations of I perform well under any circumstances, or I can handle any circumstances that are thrown my way naturally with ease, or something like that.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, good. Okay, cool. Great. All right, well, great discussion with you all. Great questions. I love it when you ask me questions because I can, there's always so much we can learn. from that. So great. So keep your questions coming, and yeah, we'll talk to you all in 2 weeks on February the 28th. Thanks a lot, and good luck with your coaching and your Brett with your book and all and everything that you're doing. I'm so excited that you're all making progress. Okay,
thank
have
you.
A great day.
Thanks a lot. Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day to you too. All right.
Yeah.
Bye.